Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, the Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's musical trivia questions come to us from the website onthisday.com. Question number one, it was on this very day, back in which year, that Mark David Chapman was sentenced for the murder of John Lennon. Was that A, 1972, B, 1981, C, 1990, or D, 2002? Which year did John Lennon's murderer get sentenced? And question number two, it was on this day, back in 1968, that the very first Beatles single on their own, Apple Records, was released in the United States. What was the name of that single? Was it A, I Want to Hold Your Hand, B, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, C, Hey Jude, or D, Yellow Submarine? 1968, first Apple Records release. What was the title of that single hit song? The answers to these two important musical trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from that same website, onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of August the 24th. Well, it was on this day back in 1967 that Jimi Hendrix's Purple Haze was released as the opening track on the U.S. release of the album, Are You Experienced? And it was 32 years ago today, 1986, that Paul Simon's Graceland was released.
Because I'm still in love with you, I want to see you dance again. Because I'm still in love with you on this harvest moon.
And in country and folk music news, we have this review of Neil Young's new album. It's called Hitchhiker. It's given 3 out of 4 stars in this review, and this review was from The Week magazine, September 15, 2017. Neil Young is always at his best when he doesn't tie up loose ends, said Stephen Thomas Erlewine in AllMusic.com. On his new album, recorded over the course of a single Lazy Stone Day in 1976 and not released until now, the legendary folk rocker accompanies himself on an acoustic guitar and sings as if few listeners would hear him, but the set of 10 songs, quote-unquote, holds together as a mood piece, one that sustains a dusky sweetness from beginning to end. Though 8 of the tunes found their way to later albums, usually in a different form, there is an intimacy and rawness to these performances that is riveting, said Hal Horowitz in AmericanSongwriter.com. Powderfingers, Pocahontas, and Human Highway are among his finest compositions, and here they arrive close to their origins at a time when creatively, Young was near the top of his game. The record's 2 previously unreleased songs, Hawaii and Give Me Strength, prove well worth hearing, even if they aren't lost classics. And this has been Neil Young's Harvest Moon, playing in the background right now.
On this harvest moon.
Thank you.
And in classical music news, we have this article titled, Why Classical Musicians Are Bracing for the Worst After Brexit. This is written in the independent.co.uk by Andrew Dixon, published on the 8th of August 2018. The composer Howard Goodall was passing through a London airport in March en route to conducting gig in Houston. Idling at the currency exchange desk, he got into a conversation with an employee about whether Brexit would be good for his industry. When Goodall said no and suggested the consequences would be disastrous, the clerk replied that everyone he asked the question gives the same answer. Goodall posted the exchange on Twitter and soon found he had touched a nerve. His message had at least 1.6 million views, around 8,500 retweets, and nearly 19,000 likes. When a Brexit-supporting Member of Parliament, Nadine Dorries, asked him to explain why the impact would be so negative, Goodall responded on his blog with a passionate closing argued post, 3,400 words long. "Well, I needed to say something," Goodall said in a recent interview. "As Britain lives through the psychodrama of Brexit, business leaders have become increasingly spooked. Car makers and financial institutions, airplane manufacturers, and the energy industry all have voiced anxiety about how much negotiation still remains to be done. By comparison, the classical music cause perhaps seems trivial." But plenty of people in the sector are unsettled. Musicians, including pianist conductors Vladimir Ashkenazy and Daniel Barenboim, have expressed grave doubts. In December, the Association of British Orchestras produced a detailed study pointing out how many ensembles relied on multinational touring and numerous other benefits of EU membership. In July, the House of Lords released a report warning the government's plans for life outside the bloc were worryingly vague, particularly when it comes to immigration. There could be a grave repercussions for the cultural sector if it becomes harder for performers and creative artists to enter Britain, it said. By then, the EU Youth Orchestra had long since announced its administrative team would be leaving London for a new home in Italy. "You can't ask for EU funding and then not be in the EU," its chief executive, Marshall Marcus, pointed out. Months after his encounter at the airport, Goodall still seems incensed. "He's a realist," he said. "Classical music was never going to be top of the priority list, but he felt the arguments for assistance to the sector were being drowned out by a bigger, better-funded lobbying group." Goodall said while many of Britain's traditional industries had withered, culture was one area where world-class exports were still produced. According to the Department for Digital, Culture, Media, and Sport, the creative industry generated around £92 billion for the British economy in 2016. The music business is international, and in this country we have an international reputation, Goodall said. We're at risk of losing it. Michael Jay, the chairman of the committee that wrote the House of Lords report, agrees. Individuals working in the UK cultural sector are highly mobile and have thrived on collaboration with people from all over the world, he said in a statement. For the creative industry, a major problem would be created if Britain detaches from agreements guaranteeing freedom of movement in the EU. If British ensembles are required to organize visas for every concert in, for example, Amsterdam or Berlin, as well as licenses to travel with their instruments, they would find it harder to tour, and given the likely costs, it would be much harder to make touring financially viable. Opera houses are particularly vulnerable, says Wasfi Dakani, who runs Grange Park Opera, a successful small company in Surrey. If, say, your Italian tenor suddenly goes sick and you need a replacement, that would get a lot of harder, she said, referring to the Verdi opera. Carey says that the Grange Park Opera is very dependent on European singers, and British performers benefit from having to compete with foreign musicians. It raises everyone's game, she said. There are myriad other concerns for the sector. The fate of thousands of students from other EU countries in British music schools, for example. While haggling over Britain's exit continues, all those issues are still up in the air. It's a very messy situation, Goodall said. It's the same in so many industries, from pharmaceuticals to technology. And the issue is, there's so few answers. In an interview at the South Bank Center near offices the EU Youth Orchestra recently vacated, Chief Executive Marcus was eager to present the ensemble's move to Italy as an opportunity. But the reality is, young British instrumentalists are likely to lose out, he said. We're currently in our own version of a transition period, but after 2020, we'll have to see how things shake down. He said he was also anxious Britain would end up more isolated culturally as well as politically. The UK has a thriving cultural scene. It might not disappear overnight, but over a 50-year period, who knows? There are signs that amid all the sound and fury of Brexit, politicians are starting to pay more attention to the concerns of the creative industry. In a statement, a spokesman for the Culture Ministry said, "We recognize the need for classical musicians to tour across the EU without prohibitive restrictions and to regularly move goods on a temporary basis. Not everyone is reassured. At the Eurostar terminal in London recently, members of the Aurora Orchestra were waiting to catch an early train to Paris. Asked about Brexit, Ruth Gibson, a 32-year-old Irish viola player based in London, rolled her eyes. 'Honestly, I'm trying not to think about it,' she said. 'We're freelance musicians. More uncertainty is the last thing we need.' On the program that evening," she added, "was Mozart's Symphony No. 40, music by an Austro-German composer being played by a London-based ensemble whose members came from across the EU. Music has no borders," Gibson said. "That's the whole point, isn't it?"
It's only a paper moon sailing over a cardboard sea, but it wouldn't be make-believe if you believe in me.
Paul McCartney's cover of It's Only a Paper Moon introduces our jazz, swing, and blues music news. An article entitled Voiced Lessons, published in The New Yorker, May 28, 2018, written by Michael Shulman. You pick up the phone knowing it's Kathleen Turner, yet the voice still comes as a shock, gravelly and dry and as deep as a sinkhole. She's calling from London, 15 minutes early so she can scurry off and do some shopping, where she's performing a stage memoir called, cheekily enough, Finding My Voice. I've never really sung professionally and never really considered it because I don't like musicals per se, she says, and because there are very few, if any, musical leads that are bass baritone. Since her film debut in the 1981 erotic thriller Body Heat, Turner has played vamps, serial moms, God, and Jessica Rabbit. But she has never played herself until now. It is odd not having a character to channel yourself through, she says. Combing through the Great American Songbook, she looked for numbers that would illuminate her recollections. When she recalls falling in love with the theater as a girl, she sings, "It's Only a Paper Moon," which is playing in the background now. "It's Only a Canvas Sky Hanging Over a Muslin Tree." Recounting life on the road, she sings a ditty called "Sweet Kentucky Ham." You figure what the hell you can eat in your motel. "Let's Fall in Love" is right at the top of the show, she says. It's like, oh, come on, let's just do this. I'm going to charm the hell out of you, and you're going to like it.
But it wouldn't be make believe.
And in Music Research and Technology, we have this article entitled Music as Medicine, How Songs Could Soon Replace Painkillers and Help You Sleep Better. This is published in Wired Health on the 9th of March, 2017, by Jayo Medeiros. Marco Adesari is attempting to fight opioid dependency with a natural high triggered by music. Anyone who wants to help the research can join an AI music experiment for free via their smartphone today. In September 2013, Marco Adesari resigned from his position as the head of product design at Nokia. The Finnish company had just been acquired by Microsoft, and Adesari, the son of a former president of Finland, decided it was time to look up his next startup. He joined the MIT Media Lab shortly after, where he was introduced to, or by, Joy Ito, the lab's director, to Ketki Karnanam, a biologist who was studying how music affects the brain. Adesari was naturally interested. He grew up playing the violin and later studied music composition at Columbia University. I used to be part of the New York scene, Adesari said. I left to do product design and to be an entrepreneur. For 15 years, I didn't play much. I have friends who are now playing with Tom York and the Red Hot Chili Peppers. Karanam showed Adesari that there was an increasing body of evidence based on imaging studies that showed what happens to the brain when exposed to music. It fires very broadly, Adesari. It's not just the auditory cortex. What happens is essentially similar to when we take psychostimulants, in other words, when we take drugs. To Adesari, this indicated that music could, at least in principle, complement or even replace the effects that pharmaceuticals had on our neurology. For instance, there were studies that showed that patients with Parkinson's disease improved their gait while listening to a song with the right beat pattern. A 2005 clinical study suggested music could be used for pain management for hernia patients after surgery. A group of patients was exposed to 1 hour of music in addition to the standard post-surgery care and allowed to self-administer morphine. The music group used one-third of the amount of morphine in comparison to a control group who didn't listen to music, Adesari says. Given the opioid epidemic that we have, and particularly how some of it starts after surgery, it seems to me that everyone should be listening to music after an operation. To Adesari, the idea that music could be used as medicine seemed like one to take seriously. One of the first things we did was to meet top scientists and musicians and ask them how we could take this idea forward, Adesari remembers. They partnered with a diverse group that today forms their advisory board, from neuroscientist Adam Gazzali to musicians Peter Gabriel and St. Vincent. The response was that we needed to study people when they are really listening to music during their day-to-day, not in the lab. The article skips down. In 20 years' time, we will consider it absurd and primitive that we did not use music and sound as an essential part of our health regimen, both for everyday wellness, but also to complement pharmaceutical treatment. In the meantime, Marco Adesari has returned to one of his favorite pastimes. I read so much of the evidence of the neurological effects of playing music that I said to myself, man, I can't in good faith do this company unless I start playing again. His new band, formed in 2015, is called Construction. Their first album is out this summer. The Chicken Dance Song introduces our pop music news. It's an article entitled, Wedding Songs Couples Secretly Hate. This is published on the 31st of July, 2018, in TheKnot.com. That's spelled K-N-O-T, by the way. Apparently, Love Shack isn't as popular as you might have thought. 5:30 8 got real with a few wedding bands and DJs and asked them which songs couples most often ban from their wedding playlist. And while we kinda understand why some of these tunes get the strike through from soonlyweds, they're overplayed, cheesy, or the wrong vibe for their party maybe, we were thrown for a loop to see a few classic wedding reception staples make the naughty list. Listen, there's no reason you should feel pressure to nix DJ Casper's Cha-Cha Slide, especially if it's your jam, but we thought you might want to know what other couples are banning. Number one, a chicken dance song. Others on the list of banned songs include Cha-Cha Slide, Macarena, Cupid Shuffle, YMCA, Electric Boogie, Electric Slide, Hokey Pokey, Wobble, Happy, Shout, Love Shack, We Are Family, Celebration, Cotton Eye Joe, Dancing Queen, Don't Stop Believing, and Sweet Caroline.
Capital City skyline photo, skyscrapers shine, the sun so low in the sky. The secretary's at the hot dog vendors, cabs honk at the bicycle messengers, rolling by.
And in local music news from the capital city, we have this article entitled Groove in the Garden 18, published on September 22nd. Coming up on September 22nd, 2018, multiple locations, general admission, back at the Raleigh Rose Garden. We're back for year four of Groove in the Garden in the Stevenson Amphitheater and Rose Garden. Tons of great live music, local food trucks, vendors, and more will all be on hand to make our annual garden party one of the most fun days of the year. Suitable for all ages. Gates open 1:30 p.m. Show starts at 2:15 p.m. And here's the lineup of some of the groups that'll be playing there. Many of the following, by the way, can be heard on YouTube, Bandcamp, Spotify, SoundCloud, or Reverb Nation. Lydia Loveless, Loamlands, Pie Face Girls, Kate Rudy, Zenso Fly, Tres Chicas, New Reveille, Lux Posh House DJ, Reese McHenry, Blue Cactus, Emily Mussolino, Camera Thomas. Concessions are also available, beer and wine, soft drinks, cans, bottled water, iced coffee by Larry's Coffee. Ticket information, $10 in advance, $15 day of, $25 advance ticket and a t-shirt, $65 VIP. VIP ticket includes a festival t-shirt, screen printed poster, VIP tent access with complimentary food and drinks and side stage viewing privileges. If you order a ticket package that includes a festival t-shirt, we will contact you directly to get your size. Shirts will be available for pickup at the merchandise booth during the festival. Children under 5 are free. Event guidelines: you are welcome to bring your own dinner. No open flames or candles. No glass bottles allowed. No outside alcohol is allowed, as the RLT campus, Raleigh Little Theater campus, is the City of Raleigh Park. To buy alcohol, you will be required to show ID and get a wristband. So contact Raleigh Little Theater if you need additional information about this, or go directly to their website, RaleighLittleTheater, that's one word, .org. Phone 919-821-47 or 4579 for more information. And as a side note, Charles Fanouf, the executive director of Raleigh Little Theater, adds, I'm hoping that we can have sighted guides at the event this year, and if so, that could be of interest to TRRS listeners. The event uses the whole campus, and there are multiple stages, so patrons who are blind or who have low vision may otherwise have challenges making it from point to point. So, Raleigh Little Theater event, coming up soon, in September, on September 22nd. The Groove in the Garden, 2018. So how'd you do on today's musical trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, it was on this day in which year that Mark David Chapman was sentenced for the murder of John Lennon. Correct answer. Answer B, 1981. Chapman was sentenced to 20 years to life in prison for the murder. The man who murdered John Lennon has told a parole board that he, quote-unquote, has a sociopathic mind and killed the Beatle because he wanted to be famous in his ninth attempt to be released on bail. Mark David Chapman shot Lennon dead on December the 9th, 1980, in the door of his home in the Dakota Building overlooking Central Park in New York. And the answer to our second question, it was on this day, back in 1968, that the very first Beatles single on their own Apple Records was released in the United States. What was the name of that single? And the correct answer was answer C, Hey Jude. As noted in songfacts.com, this was going to be the B-side to the song Revolution, but it ended up the other way around. It is a testament to this song that it pushed Revolution to the other side of the record. Paul McCartney wrote this as Hey Jules, a song meant to comfort John Lennon's 5-year-old son, Julian, as his parents were getting a divorce. The change to Jude was inspired by the character Judd in the musical Oklahoma. McCartney loves show tunes. This was the first song released on Apple Records, the record label owned by the Beatles. It was recorded at Trident Studios, London, on July 31 and August 1, 1968, with a 36-piece orchestra. Orchestra members clapped and sang on the fade-out. They earned double their normal rate for their efforts. This was the Beatles' longest single, running 7 minutes and 11 seconds, and at the time was the longest song ever released as a single. It was the first long song to get a lot of airplay, as radio stations still preferred short ones so they could play more of them. When this became a hit, stations learned that listeners would stick around if they liked the song, which paved the way for long songs like American Pie and Layla. Disc jockeys were the real winners here, as they could finally take a reasonable bathroom break. So let's close out today's program with the 1967 Beatles hit Strawberry Fields Forever.
Let me take you down, 'cause I'm going to Strawberry Fields.
Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review, and as we leave you, remember these words. Kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Content of this program intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Music Review, readily available as a podcast after the broadcast in the TRRS website, TriangleReadingService.org. You can give me a call, Randy Thompson, at 919-832-5138 if you'd like. So long, until next time.
Nothing is real.